Welcome to FedSoc Forums, a podcast of the Federal Society's Practice Groups. I'm Nate Kazmarek, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups at the Federal Society. For exclusive access to live recordings of FedSoc Forum programs, become a Federal Society member today at fedsoc.org.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this Federalist Society virtual event. I'm Caroline Bryant, and I'm the Associate Director of Practice Groups at the Federalist Society. Today, we're excited to host this webinar on the role of language in the transgender movement. Our panelists today are May Mailman and Kara Dansky. May is the former legal director of the Independent Women's Forum. She was also Deputy Solicitor General for the state of Ohio and Vice President at Restoring Integrity and Trust in Elections. Kara Dansky is a public speaker, writer, and consultant who is committed to protecting the rights, privacy, and safety of women and girls on the basis of sex in law and throughout society. In addition to The Reckoning, How the Democrats and the Left Betrayed Women and Girls, she published The Abolition of Sex, How the Transgender Agenda Harms Women and Girls. She was also the former president of the U.S. chapter of Women's Declaration International, which seeks to promote the Declaration on Women's Sex-Based Rights. If you'd like to learn more about today's speakers, their full bios can be viewed on our website, fedsoc.org. After our speakers give their presentations, we will turn to you, the audience, for questions. If you have a question, please enter it into the Q&A function at the bottom of your Zoom window. We will do our best to answer as many as we can. Finally, I'll note that, as always, all expressions of opinion today are those of our guest speakers, not the Federalist Society. With that, May, thank you so much for joining us, and the floor is yours.
All right. Thank you for having me. And this should be a fun one. So, and I'm especially excited to be here with Kara, because I think although we agree and you know, in a lot of ways, Kara and I have traveled around together trying to define sex and maintain single sex spaces. And yet there are still a lot of differences that I think the right and the left, if that's how you're going to characterize it, have as far as, you know, what is this all mean. So with that, I want to introduce Kara. So Kara and I met doing a few things, but in particular, when I was litigating on behalf of sorority women who were forced to include a male in their sorority, even though the sorority bylaws said that all new members shall be women, Kara came and supported the lawsuit in Denver. And she also is the author of a lot of very interesting, I think, amicus briefs that say a lot of things. But one of them that they say is don't use the word transgender in much more legal terms than that. So that's one of the things I want to talk about. She's also the author of several books. The most recent is The Reckoning, How Democrats and the Left Betrayed Women and Girls. And if you try and find a book review, you'll find some people on the left saying, don't say that. Like, of course, the Democrats have not betrayed women and girls. It is the people on the right. So we can ask her about that, too. But Kara, I guess my first question for you is, you're a self-described feminist and you're from the left. So how did you get into this issue of preserving women's existence, but also preserving single sex spaces, single sex sports, that kind of thing? What was your entry to this?
Oop, I think you're muted, Kara.
So sorry. Yes, I have always considered myself to be a feminist on the left. I remain a registered Democrat for various reasons, despite my disgust with my own party for throwing women and girls under the bus at the altar of so-called trans. In the fall of 2014, I was meeting with a radical feminist friend, and we were talking about all sorts of things. And I mentioned transgender rights, and she just stopped me in my tracks and told me that everything about so-called transgender is anti-woman, and told me to do my research. And I did, and I learned that she was right. And in early 2015, I joined the Women's Liberation Front and served on the board of that group from 2016 to 2020, and wrote a lot of amicus briefs in connection with that organization, which I remain a member of. And I got involved in Women's Declaration International in 2021. So I've been doing this a while.
Yeah, and so I want to talk about language, because that's one of the things that you focus on in your briefs, which people on the right use a lot of, and definitely people on the left, I mean, but So, but the New York Times and Fox News actually use the same language. And I'm not talking about the pronoun game. Briefs written by conservative attorneys, opinions written by conservative judges, not that everybody likes to think of themselves as conservative or not, but we'll just use that as shorthand. And one of the things, so they use two terms, I think. One is the use of the word gender as a synonym for sex. Okay. And then the other one is the use of the word transgender. So, for example, whether 26 states have bans on transgender athletes, something like that. So you're against using gender and transgender. And I was hoping you could explain why people should not use those terms.
So from a radical feminist perspective, sex and gender are not the same thing. And this becomes so confusing because the so-called transgender activists sometimes say they are the same thing and sometimes they say they're not. And the goalposts constantly change. But from a feminist perspective, gender is actually a word that we use to describe sex-based stereotypes. Looking back from the 1950s, you know, women have to stay home and take care of the kids and men have to earn all the money, those kinds of stereotypes. And so we consider gender to be a prison of sex stereotypes, whereas sex is biological and grounded in material reality. The word transgender is hugely problematic because it doesn't have any coherent meaning. And obviously it's the political left that has been pushing this agenda. I'm not trying to say that, but it is very frustrating to me when, as you say, conservative media outlets or judges who are appointed to the federal bench by Republican presidents use that kind of obscuring language. I think that the word transgender has been sort of inserted into our societal lexicon without any of us really understanding what it means. And when you really try to ask people of any political persuasion what that word means, you find quite quickly that it has no coherent or stable meaning. So I just think the use of the word in and of itself is hugely problematic. And it becomes confusing because a lot of people think that the phrase transgender woman refers to a female person who is on testosterone and may have had a double mastectomy. And people think that the phrase transgender man refers to a man who calls himself a woman. But in today's, you know, if you accept the language of so-called gender identity, which I do not, that's actually the opposite. So it causes a tremendous amount of confusion.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the executive orders that was a day one executive order that I worked on a lot here in the White House was about definitions, sex definitions, defending women from gender ideology extremism and restoring biological truth. And the language was so important to us, and it still is. And we'll get these inquiries saying, what do you think about transgender this or what do you think about transgender that? And, you know, one of the reason that I push back so much about using the phrase trans or the word transgender is a couple of things. One, and this is something that Kara writes about in her brief, it's not a definable word. So if it means that you don't align with your sex stereotype, like, which I think is what people generally mean, does transgender mean you have to have surgery? No, it doesn't mean that. It means that you're like not aligning with your sex stereotype. Okay, well, I'm wearing pants today. So am I transgender? You know, like I have a short haircut. Am I transgender? Or like, I'm a man, I like to watch, it's like Matt Walsh stuff, right? Like I like scented candles. And so, A, it's like not a defined term. B, I think there's been a push to have it be a defined term so that the left can create additional anti-discrimination protections around it. And you see how unworkable these are. So now you've got some state constitutions. You definitely have state laws that are saying you can't discriminate on the basis of race, which is an identifiable thing, sex, which is an identifiable thing, and gender identity. And so like transgenderism, when you say transgender, it's not a definable term. And the more credence that you give to this being like a category of people, the bigger of a fight it sets up with gender identity rights and sex rights. And so we like to dissolve the notion that there's an identifiable category. It's not even, there is no identifiable category. And then I think the other is that it's almost outdated. Transgender sort of indicates, kind of like the phrase bisexual, that there are bisexual to two sexes, right? And so there's a sexual orientation piece to that. Transgender, like there are sort of two genders and, you know, you're on the other one. But as you know, the notion of gender identity has gone so far beyond feeling either feminine or masculine, so gone very beyond any sort of notion of binariness that's somehow connected to sex. And so I feel like by using the phrase transgender, it almost lends an amount of credibility to this, as if that, like, the people who use transgender believe that there are two sexes. They don't. They're like, there's like this sweeping spectrum, and you can't give more credence than it deserves. And then as far as gender, well, I don't like using the word gender, even though it's like so much easier to use, because sex is awkward. I think conservatives don't use sex because we don't want to use the word sex. And there are some people at certain ages that just say they will not. It is crude and they won't use it. But it is, in my opinion, a sort of a feminist word that does that is more invented to talk about your roles. And we're not always trying to talk about roles. We're just trying to talk about women's existence. And so you're almost talking about just a different thing. We're now in having a different conversation than just the existence of sex. What's the sex of your baby rather than what's the gender? And so just to be very clear in our language and use the word sex, even though it is awkward.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have to also acknowledge that it was the late Justice Bader Ginsburg who, unfortunately, you know, deserves a lot of the blame for bringing this into our legal lexicon in particular.
Yes. So the story goes that when Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a petite woman, was going to go argue in front of the Supreme Court, she was told, don't keep saying the word sex. It'll be awkward for you. And so let's use the word gender. And so from my perspective, if RBG says use gender, then I say use sex. But all right. So let's, I guess, just for people who might be interested, one of the first, as I said, one of the first executive orders that Trump wrote was on defending women. It talks about a lot of the same things that we are talking about now. I just want to make sure I have it pulled up. And I just kind of want to go through it because it really, I think, lays out some helpful tips on if people are, you know, judges confronting this issue, people who are doing pro bono work on this issue, things like that, of a way to think about this, which is, you know, basing federal policy on truth, the executive order says, is critical to scientific inquiry, public safety, morale, and trust in government itself, which I think people get very into the sort of culture war of this thing. But at the end of the day, it really is about science and the existence of women. And if you have federal policies, or if you're using things, or if you're shielding the truth, then you're no longer a trustworthy person. And that has really big implications for government. We have definitions. One of the definitions, so women and female, we say this means a person belonging at conception to the sex that produces the large reproductive cell. So people love to talk about chromosomes. Woman is XX, man is XY. And for the like vast, vast majority of the time, that makes sense. But the executive order doesn't say it like that. It says that woman and female is the large reproductive cell, i.e. the egg, and then for men, it is the small reproductive cell. And so why do that? Why have that definition? Maybe more awkward, even just say XXXY. And the reason is, there's a reason you and I are all here on this earth right now, and that is because of the reproductive cells. Like, the nature of the human species is binary. And when you talk about chromosomes, you get dragged into all sorts of, well, what about this disorder? What about this disorder? What about that disorder? I mean, it's obviously crazy. It's like saying a baby that has Down syndrome is somehow not a baby because there is a disorder. Like, a man is a man, a woman is a woman, even if they have a disorder that's chromosomal. But just to avoid that whole conversation, just large reproductive cell, small reproductive cell. And then there's a bunch of directions about ways that the federal government is going to to recognize biological sex, including by getting men out of women's prisons enjoined, by getting men out of women's rape shelters, which is going through regulations right now at HUD, and ensuring privacy and intimate spaces throughout the federal government. All right, so what happens, Kara, to the transgender movement? I'm like of two minds here. On one hand, every single senator just voted to allow men in women's sports, a very simple amendment to Title IX that was going through Congress. It basically would have codified President Trump's executive order by saying, like, if you're going to have women's sports, that needs to be for women. You don't even have to. Like, if you're going to have women's sports, for women. And not a single Democrat senator voted for it. And yet, on Charlie Kirk's show, Governor Newsom just kind of went on a little bit of he made very clear that Kamala Harris was wrong to not respond to the Kamalas for they, them, and said that it's very unfair to have men and women sports. So is the transgender movement alive? Is it dead? What's going on, Kara?
So I'm actually going to Canada for International Women's Day to give a talk about where we are in this battle in the United States. First, before I forget, let me just not miss the opportunity to thank you for that executive order. Women's Declaration International USA strongly supports the order as well as the Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act. I wrote a piece in 2023 about why progressives should support it. Obviously, they did not, and you're absolutely right, not a single Senate Dem voted for it. Several of us were working behind the scenes to get meetings with a handful of them who we thought might peel off. And we knew that if they were going to peel off at all, the message was going to have to come from the lefty feminists. And so we worked very hard to get meetings with some of those Senate Dems, and they completely brushed us off. Excuse me. We had constituents in their states request meetings. And I can say all this publicly because it's out there. The constituent requests for meetings also noted that Martina Navratilova was willing to join those meetings virtually. So these Senate Dems completely brushed off their own constituents and possibly the greatest female athlete of all time. So where is it going? Yeah, I mean, Gavin Newsom's statement was quite extraordinary, and I put it up on X and I said, this is great, Governor, great move in the right direction. Now do male inmates raping women in California's largest women's prison because of a law that you, Governor, yourself signed. So we'll see where this goes. But obviously, the Democratic Party leadership is extremely unpopular right now. We know everyone's seen the statistics. 79% of American voters, including 67% of registered Democrats, support female-only sports. I cannot think of another issue where Americans are similarly aligned. So the Democrats may not shift course in the next 2 years. And my view is that if they don't, they're just going to lose again in 2026.
Yeah.
And to be clear, that's my party.
I think the Democrats are not going to change. Like, I really do think that they're going to continue to play the trans women are women thing, partially because of a lack of leadership. There's no, who is it? Is it Chuck Schumer? Is it Kamala Harris? Is it Hakeem Jeffries? Who's gonna, is it the governor of California who might say something on Charlie Kirk's show, but their policies are to double, triple. I mean, they're a sanctuary state. Their courts will take jurisdiction over custody battles. So if one parent wants to take their kid to have mutilation in California, and that obviously engenders a custody dispute, California courts will seize jurisdiction over that custody dispute and obviously say the non-transing parent is a child abuser, right? So this is a state that has gone so far in one direction that they are now essentially kidnapping children. So I will believe it when I see it. And the fact that there were zero senators that were willing to be bold, I think, just speaks volumes. Even at the Oscars, apparently there was a land acknowledgement to start the thing. Like, there's just a commitment to progressivism that I think is like very, and not to say that progressivism is always bad, because you're a leftist. So that's, we want to, because this is particularly regressive. But I don't see the movement. But we'll see if a stray statement in Charlie Kirk's show is the end of the transgender.
No, I mean, I agree with you. But I do just want to make the quick point that, as you say, so-called gender identity is one of the most regressive things I've seen in my lifetime. It is utterly sexist. It is totally homophobic. It is completely authoritarian. If you're on the political left, you are not allowed. Look, I lost a 20-year career in criminal law and justice because I speak out on these issues. If you're on the political left, you are just not permitted to talk about this, although that's changing. But I do agree with you that Democratic leadership is not going to change course before 2026.
So what next, really? And this was something I've been thinking about for a while, which is over the course of the past few years, many groups on the right, Independent Women's Forum, where I used to work, Concerned Women for America, ADF, came together with groups who straightforward, like loudly voted for Kamala Harris, groups that are on the left. Martina Navratilova herself attended a lot of our bus tours. But you know, WDI, Wolf, a lot of groups that are on the left and whose conception of women's issues often features pro-choice positions and other things. And so what happens now? And I think that by that question, I mean, why define woman? And do you feel like the groups have the same end goal or not? So if everybody's in line with, and here we're talking mostly about language, about woman meaning certain things, and then therefore women deserving certain things, women deserving single sex spaces and single sex boards. Is that the end of the movement, right? Is that we got the thing? Or is each group actually using this as a method to get something else, and there do they diverge? So what happens for the not transgender movement, for everybody else?
Yeah, I mean, it's not over. And I do need to say that both Wolf and WDI are unconditionally supportive of abortion rights, as you say. But there's a lot more work to do. So for example, a lot of people have been asking me in the past couple of weeks, look, we had that executive order on day one of the administration. We had a subsequent executive order clarifying that we don't want to have boys and men competing in sports intended for women and girls. So why do we continue to see boys and men competing in sports for women and girls? And I've tried to explain that those executive orders, as great as they are statements of policy. They're not themselves enforcement mechanisms, and there has to be a lot of enforcement of them in order to make this happen. And we still have, as you say, state laws on the books and states that are openly defying. So there's a lot more work to do, and I am excited to continue working with all those groups to keep doing it.
All right. Yeah, because I think one of the interesting things for me is what to be done about sex stereotypes, I think, because the Bostock opinion could have been a sex stereotype opinion, and it wasn't. And I think that people are pretty torn on what to do about sex stereotypes, because there's, on one hand, things that, like maybe some amount of dress code, these types of things that are not, they're not mean. Let's take like Hooters outfits aside, but like they're not meant to be mean sex stereotypes. And then there are some sex stereotypes that are harmful to women or harmful to men. And I think that that next question of like, now that we have defined woman, what now what is one that I'm just not sure, because, and I think it's actually generational. If you were to ask older people, and I've been on a lot of panels about this, are you a feminist? Actually, a lot of conservative older women will say, yes, I am a feminist, because they've seen so much progress for women that if you want to work, if I want to do a webinar, that's great. I can do that. And then I think you see a lot of younger women my age who say, absolutely not. I'm not a feminist, because we've seen it maybe equated to like more of the sexual revolution. And just like now it's like mindless swiping on Tinder or whatever, that like that is the height of feminism. And it feels like transgenderism and trying to figure out how much do we care about gender roles? How much should gender roles infect the idea of womanhood? will, I think, ultimately affect, just our thinking about gender roles absent transgenderism. But that conversation is maybe for another day.
Well, the sex stereotype question is a really interesting and challenging one. And I will reveal one of my biases now and say that when I started working with the conservative organizations that you mentioned, and I should say they're mostly women's groups, IWF and CWA are both women's groups. Obviously, others are not. But, you know, I have developed relationships with a lot of these women over the years, and we've had some really candid conversations. And I have learned that a lot of conservative women want the exact same things that a lot of leftist women want, which is, you know, professional lives and, you know, voices in civil society. Alice Paul, who was mainly responsible for the 19th Amendment, quite famously was asked, do you worry that women will vote in ways you don't want them to? And she said, that's not my concern. My concern is that women get the right to vote. So I've learned a lot over the years about women on the conservative side of the aisle battling their own sense of sex stereotypes. But moving forward, this is not so much a legal or a political issue, but I feel like I, as a feminist, I'm generally against sex stereotypes. I want people to feel free to dress how they like and to engage in whatever kinds of activities they want to, provided they're not harming anyone else. But over the years, that concept has gone really far. And now I just feel like we've thrown decorum out the window. You know, I used to live in Washington, D.C., and there's a man who spent the summer of 2020 zipping around Washington, D.C., wearing a pink bikini and sparkles and glitter, right? Like, I want men to be able to defy sex stereotypes without throwing decorum completely out the window. So I don't know how to do that legally, though. It's really challenging to think about how to write a law that would allow for people to go outside the norms of sex stereotypes while maintaining a sense of just decency and decorum in society.
Yes. The Kanye West wife outfit or whatever, it's like, we're done. Okay. So, all right, let's see. Caroline, I think we're ready for some questions if there are any.
Terrific. That was great, guys. Yeah, we have a bunch of questions. In no particular order, someone wonders, I think, and it'll be interesting to hear both Kara and May's perspective on this, but someone wonders, you know, post-election, it feels like a lot of people are talking about Democrats' refusal to budge on the transgender issue. And wondering if you all have any thoughts on, you know, we might have seen Newsom kind of really break ground, but there haven't been that many more Democrats. You know, do you have a reason why this could be? Is it kind of money related, other issues, and kind of how could we actually start to see more Democrats potentially budge on this issue?
Kara, these are your people. I'll let you start.
It's definitely a money issue. Just some names I'll throw out there. Jennifer, who's born James Pritzker, is related to the governor of Illinois, as well as Penny Pritzker, Obama's commerce secretary. There's a man named Martin, who was born Martin Rothblatt, who has made a robot replica of his wife and claims to be a woman. There's a man named John Stryker who founded something called the Arcus Foundation, which spends millions and millions of dollars on so-called trans and so-called queer issues. There's a man named Tim Gill who has a foundation called the Gill Foundation based in Colorado. All of these men are extremely wealthy, and all of these men throw a lot of money behind this. And, you know, so there's definitely a money issue. But another issue, I think, at this point is something along the lines of psychological paralysis. I don't know if that's an actual, I don't know if that's an actual phenomenon, and I'm certainly not qualified to diagnose anyone. But I just think the Democrats in power are stuck psychologically. They've gone so far. They've just gone so far that it's so hard to walk it back. They're going to have to, but I just think they're stuck.
Yeah, my analysis is related to your second point, which is the Republicans, like him or hate him, but like Trump is the leader. And so there's someone to follow. The Democrats don't have a leader. And so they are stuck with what they've got, absent some sort of leadership decision the other way. And also when you don't have a leader, the leader ends up being like Twitter, right? Just who got us on TV and like Hollywood or whatever. Just like, there's no way to change course without a leader.
I mean, to a certain extent, the head of the DNC could be considered a leader, but we saw during those elections, they spent all that time figuring out how to get a non-binary designation. I mean,
they did a lot of time on that. Yes.
helpful. So another question. So someone is on the board of a charter school in a blue state school district, which has adopted, in their words, an extremely radical regulation for supporting students who are transgender or gender nonconforming, which does not allow sex-based segregation of bathrooms, sports, health classes, or overnight sleeping accommodations. All caps for that one. Any tips for drafting, presenting, and hopefully adopting an alternative policy? In their words, they say, which will not completely divide. In my words, just adopting a different policy in a, you know, in a blue state community. What's the best path forward for this person?
I mean, I would suggest doing as May says and just using as plain of language as possible and acknowledging that there are two sexes, male and female, which the executive order makes abundantly clear. And things are changing. You know, I said I've been doing this since 2015, which is true. And I would say that between 2015 and maybe just, you know, a year ago, the feminists who've been fighting this fight felt like we were just screaming into a void. We didn't think anybody was listening. But things have changed. You know, Will Thomas came along and, you know, made everyone pay attention to this topic. And I think it is getting increasingly possible to have candid conversations, including in blue states, and pull out that 67% statistic. 67% of registered Democrats want female-only sports and spaces. That is undeniable at this point.
Yeah, the, you know, protecting privacy, protecting dignity, those are always what I go back to is privacy, dignity, safety when it comes to sports. And so to make sure that your policies are like in order to ensure the privacy and dignity of all students, including female students who deserve equal opportunities. So use a lot of the phrasing of Title IX, equal opportunities for women. And so when women do not have the burden always falls on women. That's the problem with transgenderism is like women are the weaker sex. And so the sports are going to affect them one more. Women are the ones who biologically feel the need to shield their bodies because women are the ones who get raped. So even if you're not raped in the bathroom, you're the ones who biologically have that desire to feel safe and feel secure. And so by not having that, you are violating the privacy and the dignity of women in violation of Title IX. And if you feel like their needs, if it's a charter school that takes federal money, then that is a federal Title IX violation. And so that needs to be flagged for the Department of Education. And the acting head of the Civil Rights Division in the Department of Education is Craig Treanor. He is a FedSoc guy. Like, you can stalk him down and you can tell him this. And we do this all the time. And they will go after your school.
Very helpful. So someone wonders, that a lot of the concerns about the transgender movement seem to be focused around kind of female prisons or girl sports. And they feel that this is kind of outside the purview of the federal government, such as in kind of very blue states or private organizations. This person wonders how they can kind of influence change when there's not really maybe a leader wanting change in those areas.
Yeah. So I, like I said, I still think that there's a federal hook for a lot of education. And then I think bringing lawsuits is the way. So the LPGA story in my phone might die. So if Kara is the leader of this, then that's why. But so the LPGA used to be all women. And then, and it's obviously a private organization. And then when it was sued in 2009 to have a male participate in the longest drive competition, it didn't lose the lawsuit. It folded within like a week. And so the left, the ACLU and others have been so willing to sue, and they sued under California's gender identity protection law. But guess what? Every state, California, all these states have sex protection laws. And so this is the Federal Society. Like, you are lawyers. You can bring these lawsuits. And if companies, if schools, if all these entities feel pressure from the left, which is students in South Dakota, there's a school in South Dakota that will not provide a women's bathroom. All the bathrooms have to be open to everybody in South Dakota. And the students went to the principal and said, hey, I'd really like a women's bathroom. And they said, if we do that, we'll get sued for $4 million. I don't know where they got this number, $4 million, but that's what they said. And they feel this fear on the left that they'll be sued. They don't even know how, they don't know where. And the right, actually, they will be sued. But on the right, we have all of these women's rights. We have all these state laws protecting sex-based rights. We have Title IX with all of the history of sex-based protections put together, and no one will use them. So, except for President Trump. So I think that there's a lot to be done using state sex-based non-discrimination laws in lawsuits or indecency laws, child abuse laws. I mean, get creative.
I also just want to note, I think there's a federal hook for a lot of this stuff, including in prisons. And so for anyone who doesn't know, the Prison Rape Elimination Act was enacted in 2003, and the department got around to issuing implementing regulations in 2012 under President Obama. And those implementing regulations allow for some men to be housed in a federal women's prison under certain circumstances. It's not as bad as California's self-ID law, but it's still really bad. Those regs have to go. Like, we just need to get rid of those regs and get men out of federal women's prisons completely.
There's a call to eliminate the regs in Defending Women executive order.
Yes, I was thrilled to see that. I also just want to throw out an idea. When the We Spa incident happened, and for anyone who doesn't know, We Spa is a spa in Los Angeles that maintains single sex sections where nudity is expected. So some mixed sex areas, people are expected to be clothed, but in the female section, people are expected to be nude. And a man went in there nude and fully intact and all the rest. And when women complained to the front desk, one of the staff said, sorry, this is mandated by California state law, which is true, right? Everyone got mad at the spa for letting a man in the women's section, but they weren't wrong. They are required to comply with California state law that allows men with gender identities to be in places of public accommodation that are meant for women only. So I think the business community has a huge stake in this. I would love for chambers of commerce and other business organizations to get together and say, we are being negatively impacted by these state laws. We are losing customers because of these state laws. I think they could have a tremendous amount of power with their state legislatures.
Super interesting. So someone wanted to touch on, you all have mentioned kind of litigation, executive orders, from a congressional perspective, what are ways Congress can be supporting this work? Are there any bills that you guys are currently watching and are kind of particularly wanting to see cross the finish line?
Well, I certainly would have loved to see the Protection of Women and Girls in Sports Act cross the finish line Monday night. But as May said, the Democrats in the Senate blocked it from going forward. I am not aware of any other legislation currently pending in Congress.
So one of the bills that we're working on is sex definitions. And then there's another one that's kind of attached to it. That's a longer project that's going to delete the word gender and replace it with sex. But a lot of the problems are not legislative necessarily. They're absurd court rulings like, that the Eighth Amendment requires men in women's prisons, like things to that level. So I think actually a lot of this is not necessarily legislative. It is actually just litigating these cases to the Supreme Court. There are three women's sports cases pending before the Supreme Court right now that says Title IX / the Equal Protection Clause requires men in women's sports. And so, like, yes, you could do a legislative fix to that, but that's not what Title IX requires. And so, but as far as legislation, I think then the Olympics, like there's some bills that are dealing with more professional sports in the Olympics, things like that. the U.S. government doesn't run the prisons. The PREA regs are for states that take the federal money, have to follow these regs or adopt regs that are substantially similar. But that's a regulatory issue that the federal government could fix. Obviously, you've got a Bostock issue with Title VII. I don't think that that requires revision of Title VII. I think that requires new Bostock. But so there's not a ton pending with Congress.
Helpful. Someone wonders if you guys have been looking at all outside of the United States to European countries and, you know, as the webinar is on language and kind of they're wondering, you know, how have countries been dealing with this and with the language issues and with the transgender movement?
So Women's Declaration International is the leading international organization for women's sex-based rights. And so I'm in contact with women in other countries frequently. The United Kingdom is frequently referred to as TERF Island. We don't need to get into what a TERF is right now. I call myself one. But so the UK is kind of a mixed bag. They were going in a very positive direction, but now, I don't know, we don't want to get into hate speech laws or anything like that. But I am aware of a lot of British citizens who have been threatened with criminal action for saying things online, you know, saying things like a man isn't a woman online. Germany passed what's called a self-ID law in November, which allows all men to be, May's gone. Germany's self-ID law allows any man to be legally considered a woman as of, I believe, November 5th. Spain is doing some good things in this area, and Italy. We could talk a lot more about that, but yeah, there's definitely action in Europe. Oh, and you know, a lot of European countries are doing some really good things in protecting children from the harms of puberty blockers, opposite sex hormones, and surgeries.
Super interesting. Another question for you, Kara. So as you mentioned, you are a Democrat, and I think it's people's general sense that a lot of Democrats are not exactly where you are on this issue. They're wondering who have you found to be unlikely allies in this, particularly in the Democratic Party?
Well, as far as elected officials go, almost none, certainly none in Congress. However, there are a handful of Democrats who have voted to protect female-only sports and spaces and to protect children from the harms of hormones and surgeries at the state level. So that gives me a little bit of hope. For example, one is a woman named Val Applewhite, who is a North Carolina state senator. She was the only state Dem to vote yes on a protect women's sports bill. So, you know, this issue, as we've been saying, Americans are really united on this, and Democrats are starting to realize it. And at least at the state level, they're starting to act accordingly. But again, they're not doing it at the federal level. Another interesting development is that a lot of gay rights activists, I'll say, are starting to speak out as well, because what they say is you can't protect same-sex attraction in the law if you can't acknowledge the material reality of sex. Now, of course, the traditional left-leaning organizations that are supposed to be for gay rights, like the Human Rights Campaign and GLAAD and others, have just completely sold out lesbians and gay men, completely. In the same way that the National Organization for Women, Planned Parenthood, the Women's March, all the traditionally lefty organizations that are supposed to be for women have just completely sold us out.
Super interesting. Well, I think that's most of the questions directed your way. Do you have any final comments, observations, kind of things you've learned as you've kind of become an expert on this issue through your books? Anything, any final thoughts?
Well, the process of writing The Reckoning was a very interesting one. The publisher was very excited to do it, but I published The Reckoning 2 years after I published The Abolition of Sex in November of 2023. And it was intended to serve in part as a warning to what was going to happen to the Democrats in 2024 if they didn't change course on this issue. And the other thing I wanted to do with it was make a record. So chapter 2 just contains voluminous records of men taking women's awards in sports, men being housed in women's prisons, how this issue impacts Black women uniquely, and how this issue impacts lesbians uniquely. And I would love it if some of my friends on the conservative side of the aisle would use that to say, listen, Democrats, the call is coming from within your own house.
That's fascinating. Well, Kara, thank you so much on behalf of the Federalist Society for joining us. Thank you also to our audience members who joined us. We greatly appreciate your participation. Check out our website, fedsoc.org, or follow us on all major social media platforms at FedSoc to stay up to date with announcements and upcoming webinars. Thank you once more for tuning in. And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you for listening to this episode of FedSoc Forums, a podcast of the Federal Society's Practice Groups. For more information about the Federal Society, the Practice Groups, and to become a Federal Society member, please visit our website at fedsoc.org.